So a question was sent in by one of the retreatants from afar who lives in Ireland, and he's doing the Manjushri front generation. So he asked some interesting questions. So he said, so it says, within the sphere of emptiness, this is in the sadhana, a lotus and moon seed appears in front of me. Upon it sits an orange syllable, D. So he says, obviously D is a sound. I'm curious as to how a sound can emit light rays. We also see how D is written in Sanskrit, and so it appears like an object. It's a little easier to see how an object can emit rays of light. Is it both a piece of writing and a sound? Okay. The D then turns into Manjushri. As soon as it does, I find it easier to visualize because Manjushri appears in human form, albeit made of light. Okay, so what's happening is you meditate on emptiness first, okay? Then within the sphere of emptiness, yeah, there's the sound of the D. Yeah, and then the sound turns into the form of the seed syllable D. Okay, so it's kind of like I see it in a couple of ways. Okay, first you have emptiness, the ultimate nature. Everything exists within emptiness. How does it exist? It exists dependently, especially dependent on term and label. So within emptiness, what's going to appear? The sound of a term, the sound of a label, you know? Just the D isn't a label, but it's like, to me it indicates, okay, within emptiness, you have things that are merely labeled, and so you have the sound of the D. Then the D gets a little bit grosser, and at that point, it turns into the written syllable, which you can visualize in Sanskrit or in the Tibetan. It's actually Tibetan letters as how they write Sanskrit, or you can just do it in Roman letters, and you could do it in caps, you can do it in small letters. You could probably do it in Arabic or in Hebrew or whatever language you like. But the D, you know? So you have the sequences from emptiness and then the sound, and then grosser yet is the syllable, and then even grosser than that, then you have the form of Manjushri. Okay? So it's kind of like this process of within emptiness, you know, things are just barely labeled, and then, you know, you get this whole process of cause and condition happening, and you have from a sound, a syllable, to the full body of Manjushri. Okay? So, you know, it doesn't have the sound emitting light, but it does have the seed syllable emitting light. But why not? Yeah? And I mean, the only reason why not is that we're not familiar with it, which means basically that we didn't watch Fantasia as many times as we needed to when we were little kids. Remember Fantasia? You know, things were appearing out of nowhere and transforming into everything. And we had no problem with that as little kids, did we? Yeah? You know, things transforming and becoming this and that and appearing and disappearing, and no problem to kids, yeah? As adults, you know, then we, you know, kind of, okay, if it transforms from here to here, you know, I need the tracking number. yeah. So, okay, so just kind of, you know, relax with it happening, and you know, and see what this process comes to mean to you, you know, what it meditates within emptiness. You get a sound, then you get a syllable, then you get a full body. What does that mean to you? How does it make you understand emptiness and dependent arising being complementary. Okay. And Manjushri's body, is made of light, which is again emphasizing, things are merely labeled. They aren't solid and concrete. Yeah. So visualizing a form made of light, when then the seed syllable is also made of light, helps you see these things not so concrete, not so truly existent. Okay. Then he said, again, we have the idea of sounds made visible. Okay, the syllable Om marks the crown of his head, Ah his throat, and Hum his heart. Okay, so I'm familiar with the idea of synesthesia, the idea that taste can have a feel and that colors can have a flavor and that sounds can have a taste. Okay. However, I struggle a bit at this stage of the sadhana because I'm not sure whether I'm supposed to visualize the Sanskrit writing of the sounds on Manjushri's crown, throat, etc. I find it hard to understand why we should visualize Sanskrit writing on these parts of Manjushri. Okay, then the Hum seems to show the same behavior as the D, in that it again also emits light rays. Okay, so the first part, doesn't matter what language or what script you visualize the letters in. Okay, why do we visualize the letters? Because in our subtle nervous system, we have three of the several chakras we have. One is at the crown, which is inside the crown of our head, okay? And then others is inside our throat, in front of the spine, and the other is inside the center of our chest, again, in front of the spine. So it's crown and throat, and then they say heart. So heart doesn't mean over here, it means in the center of our chest. So there's three chakras there which have to do with the flow of our subtle energy. And so to purify these, we visualize these three pure syllables there. So the white Om symbolizes the Buddha's body and all the qualities of the Buddha's body. The red Ah, the Buddha's speech, in the throat, kind of helping us to transform our speech in so it's more like the Buddha's speech. And then the Buddha's mind in our heart, because our heart is the seat of our mind, the seat of our emotions, as a way of transforming our mind and feelings and all of our cognitions. Okay? So it's done to, because of the subtle nervous system, and also as a way of blessing our own body, speech, and mind by thinking that we want to transform them into the Buddha's body, speech, and mind. So we're dealing with the symbols there, that the Om Ah Hum represent. Okay? Okay, then the D, yes, the Hum, yes, it acts like the D and it starts emitting light, but why not? Yeah, why not? I don't see any problem with it. But anyway, I also struggle a little bit when I think of sentient beings becoming Manjushri and dissolving into the D. Some of those sentient beings are my children. It's like I'm giving them away or something. And I feel resistance to this. Okay, well, when they're misbehaving, maybe it's easier to dissolve them into the D. Actually, I think this resistance comes because of attachment and because of self-grasping, that we're seeing the people as real solid people, real solid identities with their own, permanent personalities. And so we're making everybody, quite concrete. So the idea then of people dissolving into light and dissolving back into the D, it's like, wait, you're taking away my objects of attachment. Okay. But, are these people that we care about or the people that we hate, are any of them concrete, solid personalities? None of them are. And even though their basis of designation, their mind and their body, aren't solid and concrete. And especially with kids, you could see it. You know, they're changing every year. Yeah. So there's nothing solid and concrete about your child. You know, their body's changing, their mind's changing, what they think is changing, what they're feeling is changing, their behavior is changing. There's nothing permanent there to glom onto and say, this is so-and-so, and this is my child. Yeah, or my boss, or my enemy. You know, there's nothing about any living being that is inherently ours. There's nothing about any object that is inherently ours. You know, mine is just a designation that we give to certain things, you know, that are conventionally agreed upon. And when we don't happen to conventionally agree upon them, then we quarrel. And that's what most court cases are about, trying to decide what label to put on something. That's all it is, you know. And then according to the label, you experience some certain results. Okay. So if people have a dispute about property, they're disputing, do we put the label mine or yours on it? That's all it is. There's nothing inside that object that is inherently mine or inherently yours. It's just a social convention. That's it. That's why things can change ownership. Yeah. Yeah. And you don't have to really do all the paperwork. You just need, I mean, the paperwork is making official the change in the label. But the change in the label is just our mind. I give this to you, then it's yours. Okay, then we make problems for ourselves because you have to sign, you know, 15 papers and have them notarized and, you know, and everything has to be spelled the right way or else it doesn't count. Okay, so, but that's human beings making up problems for ourselves so that we have something to do. You know, and then you have a social security number in case your names and the spellings of your names are exactly the same, you know, because that's one thing the internet has revealed to us is how many people have exactly the same name, including the middle name. Yeah. So then you need a social security number and you need a passport. Yeah. So that you can separate people. And that's why some people are suggesting that they insert chips under our skin so that you can tell who somebody is. You know, what is the correct label of this person? You know, scan the chip and then you'll see. Okay, but it's all just labels, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, so essentially my questions relate to what is a D? Okay, is it a holy sound? How did it become holy? Is it because of so many beings have chanted D with love and compassion that the sound has become embedded with love and compassion in the human psyche? Yeah? Good. I mean, this person is really thinking about what he's doing. He's not just blindly going blah, 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 blah. He's really thinking about it. So it's fantastic. Okay. So yeah, D is a holy sound. How did it become holy? Probably in the same way mantras become holy. And what they say about mantras or seed syllables, you know, because a seed syllable represents the realizations of that Buddha. So the D is like a synthesis of the realizations of Manjushri, you know, which is the same wisdom and compassion and all the other excellent qualities that all the other Buddhas share, but it's appearing in that form of Manjushri, so it appears, you know, it's synthesized in the syllable D, and then also in the letters of the mantra, Omara Patsanadi, okay? And so It's like you have the realizations, which are something intangible. They appear as a sound in order to communicate with us, because we can't tap into the Buddha's mind directly. They appear as a seed syllable to communicate with us. They appear as a mantra to communicate with us. These realizations appear as the whole body of the deity, you know, as the full Manjushri, in order to communicate with us, simply because as beings in the desire realm, you know, we relate to form and color and sound and so on. So that's the only way the Buddha has to communicate with us, because we are so gross that we can't tap into the Buddha's mind. Yeah, we don't have clairvoyance. Yeah. Okay. So that's the way the Buddha communicates with us. And so these are like coming out of the empty and compassionate nature of the Buddha's mind. And then by reciting them or by visualizing them, we're trying to go the other way, coming back into the realizations of a Buddha. You know, what is a Buddha's realization of emptiness like? What is their realization of equanimity or love, compassion, joy? What's that really like? So these sounds and these syllables and these forms help us contemplate what those qualities are. And by contemplating those qualities, that helps us generate those same qualities within ourselves, which is what the path is all about. Okay? And then, okay, he closes the email. It's quite beautiful. He says, yeah, I'm just genuinely trying to understand what I'm doing when I do the sadhana. May I say also that doing the sadhana gives me a good sense of peace afterwards, even though I don't know why I'm doing much of it. But you see, this is how a sadhana works. It's a very special psychological process that is dealing with symbols. So it's dealing with another way of knowing things, you know. It's not dealing so much with our intellectual, rational mind, although that's definitely there. But it's expressing all that knowledge, all that wisdom, through symbols, in the same way that an artist expresses what they're feeling through symbols, or a musician expresses what they're feeling through sounds. Okay? So it works on us in a different way, but when we use both ways, the symbolic way plus, you know, the rational way that we're trying to gain through our study and our long-term meditations, you know, they approach us in a different way, and they work together to help us understand and to transform our heart and mind. Also, this thing about transforming your children into Manjushris, and then they dissolve into light and absorb back in the D. It's also symbolizing that your children have the Buddha nature, and that they can become Buddhas. You know, and that you can help them on the path, because the D is radiating out light, so you're helping them by leading them on the path. They become Manjushris, okay, and then they absorb back into the D, which is also symbolizing that how we see people completely comes from our own mind. We project who they are, and then we can absorb back into ourselves what we've projected them as being. Okay, but it also indicates that, you know, you can transform your kids into Manjushri. So then they'll be running around with the house with a different kind of sword, you know. but isn't that a nice thought, that your children can become Manjushri, that your kids can become fully awakened Buddhas, that they don't have to always have this body like this that gets old and sick and dies, but that they can transform their mind into wisdom and compassion and have a body of light? And aren't they much better off being Manjushris than remaining as your kids with this body that gets old and sick and dies, and a mind that gets confused. Yeah? So if we really wish well to other beings, we're going to wish them to become Buddhists. Yeah? So that's kind of like, you know, wishing your kids and wishing your enemies. Yeah? I mean, everybody in Al-Qaeda dissolves, you know, becomes into light, dissolves and becomes Manjushri, dissolves into light, you know? Isn't that a nice way of thinking that, you know, these sentient beings are not permanent people who all they do day after day is behead people, you know? Excuse me, Al-Qaeda doesn't do that. That's ISIS, you know? I don't want to confuse him. But, I mean, you get what I'm saying is that instead of just attaching a label and making things concrete, we really see people's potential and that they can change, you know, into something really beautiful and really wonderful, and that we can, as we practice, affect that change and help them to go in that direction.